Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Okay, you wanted to suggest explanation of what's the relevance of this discussion?
Nityananda?
Yes, Damodar. Which? Okay. Who was it I told yesterday would speak first today? Damodar? Okay. No. It was either you or Vishnukanta. You. Okay. Go ahead.
I'll just try to, in my own words, say.
Yes.
So, Jiva Goswami, what happened before is that Jiva Goswami established that all the statements of Vedas are authoritative. Now, Jiva Goswami mentions Jayamini, who says that the authoritative are only those pertaining to duties. Now, to establish that the statements of fact, definitive and explanatory statements referring to the absolute truth, which are considered by Jayamini as less important, are of no less importance, if not more, of course, Jiva Goswami brings in the argument between the two fractions of Prabhakara branch of Jayamini followers, just to show that the word can express the fact by itself without being connected to the injunction. And without proving this, we will have to agree on the point that the Vedas cannot really describe the absolute truth, which is beyond our present experience, since the words describing it would not have any possibility to derive their Shakti from anywhere, and that the statements of fact describing that are basically for social misfits, because that's what they think. And
yes.
So it looks like for that purpose Jiva Goswami brings this argument in.
Yes.
Like to actually finally establish the fact that Vedas can describe absolute truth.
Yes.
Because if we are left with Jayamini's view, they can't describe, because all the words which describe absolute truth would have nowhere to gain their Shakti from.
Yes. Yes.
That's, I think.
What you find in the Karmamamsa is an emphasis on a certain part of the Vedas, on the Brahmanas. Not even the mantras, but the Brahmanas explain the purpose of the mantras. Jeremy, do you have any antiseptic cream? I scraped my finger. And I just, whereas the Vedantists put emphasis on the Upanishads. So the Mimamsakas are going to de-emphasize the importance of the Upanishads, which describe the absolute truth as just being artivad, but being of no philosophical importance. So we want to defend that the Upanishadic presentation of the absolute truth is significant. I'll try the Bora line. Thank you. And what we're doing is we're looking at the different attempts to explain what is the connection with something to be done, with injunction, that all statements have to have. Especially all Vedic statements, to be significant. What's the nature of that? And we find, and we're going to discover that there isn't any real reason to reject the significance of statements of fact. And that in real life, many of the statements we deal with are just statements of fact. Okay. I'm just adding on to what you said. I agree with what you said.
So is it correct understanding that what's
yes.
why Jiva Goswami
yes.
brings it in?
Yes.
And then it's also, I noticed one more thing. It's interesting how he does it, because he proves that he established this thing, which is actually against Jaimini's views, using by the statements from the mouth of Jaimini himself.
Yeah.
Because how it actually... It's, graphically, what it happens, discussion started from the Vedas, from discussing the Vedas. Now, then that radical fraction of Prabhakara school, they dragged it down to ordinary language. Less radicals on the platform of the ordinary language, they disproved it, and then Jiva Goswami took that disproval and brought it back to Vedic platform.
Yes.
So kind of from there by their own mouth, the kind of countered Panini.
Yes.
Oh, so sorry, Jaimini.
Yes. But I'm a little puzzled about how we shifted the argument from just focus on the statements of the Vedas, how we're talking about ordinary language. Because if you look in the previous paragraph, the proposal of the radical Prabhakaras is that Veda Vakyanam Pramanyasya. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Karye evarte Vedasya Pramanam Nasidhe. That was their thesis. That the authority of the Vedas is only in reference to a meaning that has connection with something to be done, or that is something to be done. The authority of the Vedas is only in reference to a meaning that is something to be done. If you don't have such reference, directly or indirectly, then you don't have authority. You're just babbling, you're just, you know, speaking artavad. Nasiddhi, reference to a statement of fact, a statement of fact doesn't have authority. Because it's not important. You know, like I'm here trying to give a serious discourse on Tathagatasandharma and say, hey, look at that fly on the wall. You know, it's a true statement, but it's totally irrelevant. Yeah. So they view like that all their descriptions of the absolute truth in the Vedas. So what, you know? Maybe true, but it has nothing to do with our purpose. Okay, I just want to point out that that's the proposal of the radical Prabhakaras. And what's being answered in the next paragraph, the one we're stuck on, is in reference to that. It's really, the focus is on the Vedic language. Although everybody's giving examples from ordinary language, both sides are giving examples from ordinary language, but we're supposed to be proving a point about Vedic language. And that's all we're concerned with. Jiva Goswami, what he's concerned with now, is establishing the authority of the Vedas. So it's Vedic language that's really of our concern. Yeah, well, by their dispute. Because they discover things that undermine their own theory in the course of disputing. Yeah. Well, okay, what the whole is that their proposal that at least statements of the Vedas have to have connection to Karya to be significant, that's undermined. You know, because they can't defend it. They you know. Okay, now, Bart Rampur, you had something to talk about? Then we'll come back to our current paragraph and try to decipher it. This is the most difficult paragraph maybe in all of the Sandarbhas.
Before,
don't be, you know, don't expect that it's going to be like this every day forever. Yeah. And you're not in hell. You'll get out of it eventually.
before I go ahead and say what I wanted to say, I just want to substantiate this more.
Yes.
I was trying to find it. I couldn't find it. In that commentary of Yadvakyato Dharma Iti Tarasthito, that Narada Muni is speaking to Vyasadev.
Yes.
There, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is quoting. First Sridhar Swami is quoting that Uktam Cha Bhattaihi. Bhattaihi, I think, refers to Kumarila Bhatta because he is the only Bhatta who is the major commentator on Mimamsa.
You're going too fast. You lose me.
Bhattaihi Uktam, he says. And then Bhattaihi, I think, refers to Kumarila Bhatta because he is the only Bhatta. But Bhattaihi refers to Kumarila Bhatta because he's the only major commentator on Mimamsa.
Bhatta.
Yeah.
Bhatta is Kumarila Bhatta, yes.
So he's quoting Kumarila Bhatta.
Yes, Kumarila Bhatta is the other school of Prabhakara and Kumarila. They're the two opposite schools.
Generally, the Mimamsa idea, what he gives a nice picture of that by that quote. He says, these settled facts and statements like that, those people who are lame or blind and who are not actually able to do the Mimamsa rituals,
yes,
and do the household duties properly, they can take up Brahmacharya and Sannyasa And for them, all such Upanishadic dealings are...
Okay, it's for useless people who can't do anything better but they become brahmacharis.
Yeah.
Okay. That's Kumara Labhata?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. It says Bhattai. It must be it's Kumara Labhata.
Bhattai, yeah. Bhatta is his school. Okay.
And about this, I wanted to say... I was just trying to gloss it so that whether I'm getting it properly. The conservatives, they ask them that why settled facts lack denotative power.
Well, certain facts.
Settled facts.
Set facts.
Settled facts, why they lack denotative power.
No. It's not the facts, it's the words that have denotive power.
Oh, yeah.
The words refer to the facts. Yeah. Siddhe is locative, that means in reference to a statement. Words is implied, the subject is implied. There is no Shakti, well, Shakti belongs to words. So words don't have any Shakti in reference to statement of fact, matter of fact.
So then they give them two options to explain that, and they say that either because the statement words that just express settled facts,
yeah,
they can't give the person the experience of the activities which are involved to experience those facts.
Well, let's not talk about experience of activity. There's just no mention of any activity. There's no indication of any activity in the statement made of such words. When words just refer to a matter of fact, then there's no, in that statement, there's not going to be any mention of an activity that what, lets you, how do you say it?
Experience the, here it's, the way here well, it's to enable
Grahaka means to come to understand, to recognize, to grasp the meaning. You know, grahaka is a thing, like I give an explanation that explains something to you, and a light bulb goes off in your head. That's grahanam. That means you've grasped the idea finally. You didn't understand it before, then I say something like, if you don't understand, you're not going to pass the test. Or, no, I'm going to give you some inspiration to understand, or some explanation that helps you understand it. That's grahaka. Well, here, the claim is that the mention or the connection with something that has to be done, or at least an activity, is the only thing that's going to let you understand what the word means. The Shakti Grahaka.
The grasp?
Grasp. Grasp means just catch the meaning. Understand the meaning.
Can we extend it to this? Like, for example, if somebody says that the peda is sweet, so then he can relate to that, or he can grasp the...
Yeah, you say in English, do you catch my meaning?
He can do that only if he was involved in the activity of eating the sweet before. And only then the words, it is sweet, can give him a remembrance or what he has already gained by experience. It cannot make him experience the sweetness.
Well, see, you're interpreting it as having an experience of something. You know, if you never experienced the absolute truth, I can talk about it day and night and you wouldn't understand anything. That's what you're saying. You know, I can talk about sweet balls, but it makes no sense to you if you never tasted a sweet ball.
Yeah.
But that's not what they're talking about here. It's not experience, but understanding the connection between a word and its meaning. I know that the word gulab jamun in Hindi means a certain kind of sweet ball, even if I never saw one. You know, I took a Hindi class in the University of Wisconsin, and they don't have any gulab jamuns there. I never saw one. I never tasted one. But I read about them in Hindi class. I do know the connection between the word and its meaning, even though I never tasted one, or I never even smelled or saw one. I never came within 1,000 miles of a gulab jamun. Still, I know the connection between the words and its meaning. That's what we're talking about here. Grasping, not actually eating a sweet ball, but just grasping the meaning of the word gulab jamun. Gulab jamun is a certain sweet cake, you know, that the Hindus eat. I never saw one, but, you know.
Then it depends on...
It's not experience. It's just understanding the meaning, the reference between the word and the thing. That's what we're talking about here. That's the grahaka. The grahanam here is very specific. Not actually grabbing a sweet ball and putting it in your mouth.
Yeah, but the grahanam, the way grahanam is done then will be different people.
But this is a technical use of the word grahanam within theory of language. It's not talking about actually eating sweet balls. It's talking about words and meanings. In the realm of words and meaning, you don't get any sweet balls. You don't actually taste anything. It's just theory. It's just language theory. It's a technical use of the word granam. Actually, grabbing a sweet ball is in a different realm. That's not what we're talking about.
Unless he has actually grabbed a sweet ball before and tasted it. If somebody says sweet, then it won't ring any bell. Like, he might have heard
that's true.
Theory about this, theory.
And you're right. But that's a theory of, you know, of human life. It's not the discussion at hand. What you're saying is very valid, but it's not what this paragraph is saying. Yeah, it's just words and their meanings, and by the time, you know, you'll die of starvation. You know, you'll never get any sweet balls just reading this stuff.
Okay, so they're saying that settled facts, words saying settled facts themselves don't have any power to make the person grasp the connection.
Yeah, because the connection has to be grasped. You have to learn a language. I don't know why they're doing this, but they're putting emphasis on how did you learn what the words mean. Yes. You know, you're not born with a built-in knowledge of what the words mean. Otherwise, every child who's born would know all the languages. But you have to learn that whatever language is being spoken in your house, you have to learn it. You're not born knowing it. The baby just goes goo goo ga ga, and he doesn't know how to use language. And he doesn't understand what his parents are saying. Eventually, he picks it up. He gradually learns what the words mean. And he even learns how to use them himself. But it has to be learned. So let's ask this question. So what? What is having to learn what the words meant back in your childhood have to do with what words do right now? Why are they bringing this in? Why are the radicals using this as part of their argument, as the main part of their argument, that words have to have a connection with something to do? And right now, it doesn't seem like all the words have a connection with something to do. A lot of statements we're actually using, or even the Vedas, a lot of statements in the Vedas don't seem to have a connection with something to do. Now, their argument is, well, anyway, when you were a child, you only learned what the words mean in connection with something to do. Does that prove anything? Not really? Well, why are they presenting that as their argument? Let's try to understand why. Why they claim, well, they think that's a good argument. It doesn't seem like, to me, maybe I don't understand what he's saying, or why he's saying it. It doesn't seem to prove the point. Let's go back to the previous paragraph and try to understand the radical argument. Why they're making that argument. Maybe you know, but Damodar has his head up. Yeah? I'm asking questions that I don't know the answers.
I'm not attempting to answer your question.
Yes, this one.
I'm not attempting.
Oh, you're going to change the topic.
Slightly.
Well, okay, but then we're going to come back to it because I want to answer this question.
Yes. We can do that.
Go ahead.
Like
we got. You got your hand in your hand. I see them.
The first time we went through this, and we read the commentary, I thought
you understood what it means. Now I've confused everything.
No, I think I still understand what's happening. I mean, I get the essence of it, so I'm wondering why are we spending so much time on this?
Okay, here's a proposal. Forget it. Let's move on to something else.
I mean, we understand the essence. We understand what's being said. And,
I don't. I got to publish this. Okay. I had to publish this, and I still don't understand what it means. So I'm asking for help here.
Okay.
It really doesn't all fit together. Here's the first problem. Let's go back to the previous paragraph. Okay, let's. Are you answers or are you something else? Because if it's something else, let's deal with it and get it out of the way. Okay, go ahead.
So you asked that why the child learns only by actions.
Why?
The child learns the shakti of the words only by with reference to the actions that
yes.
are. So I was thinking that during our spoken Sanskrit class in the beginning stage, so we had a list of words, list of verbs given by the Sanskrit Bharati, more than 100 verbs, akhyata verbs, in different, all of them were akhyata forms. So he was teaching them. So I was just thinking, maybe that they might think that only those words are related to something to do. Whereas if you take the nouns and suppose if we say any noun to a child, he may see the word, but he may not understand what this means. But if we do an action, then he will immediately grasp what the action is. So with respect to the actions, if the nouns are connected with respect to actions, then he will put together the nouns and actions and he will make sense of the noun also, which otherwise independently he may not be able to understand.
Okay, but this is what you were saying yesterday. You're saying in effect that their assumption is not right.
No, I'm supporting their assumption.
But you're saying that you can learn the meaning of nouns just by saying, that's an Almira, that's a blackboard, and it has nothing to do with doing anything, right?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. But we got two sides here. And it's like you're going to a boxing ring, and Mr. Gonzalez is going to fight against Mr. The two fighters are going to fight each other, and you're sitting there asking, "What do we have to fight for? Why don't we be friends?"
But
it's a boxing match, So,
actually, I'm supporting their assumption. This is opposite to what I said yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm supporting the assumption. It's opposite.
You're supporting their argument?
Yeah.
No, but you're.
I'm trying.
Can you say it again? Then I didn't understand.
No, actually, what I said was that when a child is learning the words, so I will have to say that the whole thing again because.
No, but you're saying that's the verbs look like they're all referring to actions, but when you're teaching him nouns,
they have to be connected with respect
why?
To verbs in order to.
To make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's their argument.
That's their argument, so I'm trying to
that's
understand.
That's the only way you learn what any words
with
mean.
With an example.
You go, someone said, bring the cow. Or bring the salt, or something.
So if we say something, some word, the meaning of the word he may not understand. He may not realize. But if you say something with respect to the action, then the action will be done. And
you see something.
And in the process of doing the action, the nouns will be used. So he will understand with respect in that process, and he will understand the meaning of verbs.
Okay, so that makes sense. There's coherence in the argument. The only thing is, what does it prove? How does that prove that words can't refer to a matter of fact? Because even if all the words you ever learned, you learned only from an action. How does that prove that words can't refer to a matter of fact? Yeah.
I thought of that five-step argument, according to Nyaya, and I think that this point about childhood, it's an udaharana.
It's a udaharana.
An example.
Okay, can you explain? Can you tell us?
So their pratigya or their hypothesis is that
Karye eva arte vedasya pramanam nasiti.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Vedic statements are authoritative only in relation to statements.
Something that needs to be done.
Yeah. Now they say that the hetu is that hetu, or the reason for that is because generally, because hetu is like a general principle.
Yeah,
like
what is the general
principle is that you the words have the meaning are meaningful at all if they are connected to the.
You mean all words, not even just Vedic words?
Yeah, because that's what this Karya Vidhana, Karyanvita Vidhana.
Yeah, this statement, bring the cow, is not from the Vedas. It's just a farmer talking to his son.
Yeah, so they say they want to. They hypothesize Vedas, but then as a hetu they bring a general principle. Now, then they show, just like
But the general principle is, it's right here, tatraiva shakti tatparya yor avadaditvat.
Yeah.
Because shakti and purport are avadaditva, they're recognized only in reference to... Akarye arte.
Okay, so that's hetu.
But why avadharitvat? Why are we talking about, why do we shift the argument to where you, how you learned what the words mean? That's what I'm confused about.
But that mechanism and...
Go ahead.
The example of childhood, what they give, right?
Yeah.
It's an udaharana part of the...
Of learning...
Of their
like
whole
this,
argument.
This boy on the farm, he learned. That's how he learned his words.
Yeah, and then they upanaya. That's just like in our case.
But this hetu, like, what would you call this hetu? It's a special kind of a siddha. It's irrelevant. It's like, you know, all men are mortal because the moon is made of blue cheese. Yeah, it's like, okay, all words only refer to things to be done because that's how you learn the words. But what is, why does the way you learn the words prove what the words can mean? I learned the words this way or that way, but now I'm using them different ways. I know it's what's here, but why is it there? Why is he presenting that as the argument?
Because they made a mistake, and that's hard.
That's a stupid argument?
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know, they're supposed to be smart people. Why do they make such a stupid argument? I don't know, I think maybe we don't catch... I don't catch the basis of the argument.
Jiva Goswami is more concerned with the responses by another party of Prabhakara, less radicals, because he will use their statements...
To knock this apart.
To further on... prove his point that Vedas can describe absolute.
I mean, you do find this in Nyaya. The Nyaya commentaries. Really stupid arguments. You know, all the time. And I don't see why people take them seriously. But... yes.
Also, before we take all the argument, like...
Go ahead. Yeah.
Before we... I get into all the nitty-gritty of the argument, I feel that we haven't fully covered the argument, like what they say and what's our response.
Right, but
we haven't finished that. Then after we see the conclusion is made, then maybe we can go back and see more in context, because we haven't seen the full picture yet.
Right, but it's like I'm just stuck on this first first part, the radical argument. I don't see the sense of it. I don't see how their reason proves what they want to prove.
I mean, doesn't make sense. Like,
it should make some sense. I mean, if you're going to, you know, have a poor Rinpoche,
yeah,
you should give him a fair chance and let him present a coherent argument. It's not fair to set up a straw man that just talks nonsense and then you knock him down. Are these Prabhakaras that stupid, or maybe we just don't understand what they're saying?
Then after Bharatam,
go ahead, please. Yeah.
After Bharatam, because he's been having his hand. So after him, I'd like to comment.
Go ahead. Yeah, please.
Yeah, regarding that analogy, that hetu, what you're quoting, udaharanam. I think because they're quoting that, and they think that it substantiates what they're saying, because the words having denotative power means. By that denotative power, how to judge whether the word has denotative power is when there is somebody whom it denotes something to. Unless there is a person to whom it's denoted.
Unless someone understands what it means, there's no real denotative power.
Yes. And the best example of someone is when a person who didn't know anything is there. And then when the words began to denote things to him, how did they begin?
I guess it's important, the difference between, first of all, not knowing what it means, and then finding out what it means.
Yes.
And you have to go back. You have to go back to childhood. For most people, by the time they're 10 years old, they know what most of the words mean.
And especially because when a person is grown up, if you take it in that stage, then maybe a person may object, saying that no, how he learns actually is not like that. He already has a basic database, and whatever new thing he's getting, he is imposing partially whatever he knows on that new thing, and he's adjusting that new thing. So when you take the example of a child who is like a blank slate, then there is less possibility of that objection.
And I think also, yes, also, maybe I'm just saying the same thing in a different way. We're saying, the radicals are saying, every significant statement has a connection with the thing that has to be done. And it seems like there are many statements that don't, but you have to go under the surface and go back to your childhood and remember how you first learned what the word means. There you'll find the connection with something to be done. There is a connection with something to be done, but it's back in your past. It's back when you first learned the word. Okay, so that's relevant. Sort of. It's relevant. I don't see how it proves anything. Yes?
In this way, their argument is that they prove that statements which include an activity that needs to be done is superior to statements that are simple, that are simply settled fact. Does that make sense? What I just said?
Well, it's superior in what sense? In what sense?
In one sense is that
they're authoritative. There's pramanium.
First of all, these are the first statements you understand, and then you can understand all other statements from these statements. Therefore, these are the prime statements, the most important statements. And this is how you get to learn things. So they're the most essential.
Okay.
The most essential statements, because by these statements you understand everything else. That's
okay. I think here, like. It says here, tataha pratamata eva karyan vite eva pravites tatraiva shakti graha. Because, let me see if I can find the translation here at the bottom. Thus, as a person from the very beginning acts only in response to words that, as combined with other words in a sentence, connect to something that needs to be done, only in such connections is the literal meaning of words recognized, and should the purport of statements be found? Okay. You see, the whole, for the mimamsakas and the nyayakas, the question is, how do words refer to their meanings? What's the shakti of words? The argument is the shakti has to be based on a connection with something that needs to be done. Otherwise, no shakti. No power to refer to anything. That's... So since, all the way back in your childhood, that's the only way you learned what words mean, therefore, in essence, even now, all words that you use have to have some connection hidden in the background with something that had to be done. Like that cow you saw when you were 3 years old, your father said to somebody else, bring the cow. That's in your memory, and therefore you know what a cow is.
So the essential basis of language, of communication, they say, is transmitted through activities that has to be done. That's the foundation.
Actually, the thesis is just about Vedic language. Yes. But they're using something more general to prove it.
And then they apply this to Vedic language that...
Well, if it's true of all language, then it's also true of Vedic language.
Yeah, and they apply and they say, therefore, what's found in the Vedas as being injunctions is the real essential things. Other things are superficial.
Yeah.
We don't really need to worship God. I mean, yeah. God, yes. The absolute truth, that's not really relevant. Because the true things is the injunctions.
Yes.
What has to be done.
Yes.
So they use that logic. Is that proper understanding?
Yes. Vishnukant first.
There is a general statement that more things are caught than by their thought.
What is?
More things are caught than thought. This is a
more things are caught than thought.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
Things are like understood by the behavior and the actions than the way by which they're inculcated. Like this is used.
Example?
This is used in the context like the behavior of a devotees. Like in that context, the devotees have to behave in a way that, and by their behavior, people will learn. I mean, they are setting an example like that. I mean, if they behave by their actions, they are teaching people others. So in this context, the statement is made that more things are caught than we taught. So.
Yes.
With respect to this, we can give a supportive argument for what they are saying, that the actions, they create a very, very important impression in the minds of the person, and he understands this and he grasps the thing more clearly and authoritatively based on the actions than just by means of act or something like that. Is that right?
Yes. Especially for the Mimamsakas, of all the Mimamsakas. The most important thing in life for them is doing your Vedic duty, which means doing sacrificial rituals. Everything else in life is unimportant. For us, doing some service for Krishna and pleasing him is the most important thing in life. But they're a different kind of people. They think doing the rituals is the most important thing in life. Everything else is less important.
But isn't there
even... So with that bias, they say things like this. They give arguments like this. That you trace... You know, just like Sigmund Freud thought the most important thing in life was sex. So therefore, he developed his theory of psychology about the Oedipus complex, how every boy really wanted to have sex with his mother, you know, because he had sex on his mind. So these guys, they have rituals on their mind. And therefore, your whole life is based on that your father told someone else to bring a cow. Yeah. That's your primeval experience.
But yes. Isn't there even a single injunction with respect to doing worship to the Lord and doing duty in order to... My question isn't there even a single injunction with respect to worshipping the Lord or doing meditation or any kind of spiritual process?
You'll find that in the Yoga Shastra, but not in the Karma Mimamsa.
No, in a sense, in the Vedas, I'm saying.
Or
in
the Vedas.
Upanishads and... We have several Vaishnava.
Well, in the Upanishads you have.
Yeah, so they are also
part of Vedas. The Mimamsakas say, these Upanishads are not important.
No, but there's no substantial reason for that. Is also they are also part of Vedas as much as Brahmanas are.
Yeah, they're wrong. Anga. They're wrong, but it's a basic assumption.
But there's no logical.
There isn't.
For them.
They're wrong. They're basically wrong. To ignore the Upanishads is wrong.
Even if we accept their argument saying that only the statements in the Vedas related to injunction are authoritative, we can quote several injunctions from the Vaishnava Upanishads, especially for Vaishnavas, that those Upanishads saying many statements with respect to worshipping the Lord and getting out of this material existence, and so many injunctions are there like that. Even if we accept their argument, we can prove that the Upanishads and other statements should be accepted.
We can. But it's not what's being done here. We're going to have to get through these two paragraphs so we can get back to that. After these two paragraphs, if we ever get done with them, we'll be back to the sane reality of the necessity of worshiping the Supreme Lord. But right now we're stuck with dealing with Jiva Goswami brought them in. He invited them in, these Prabhakaras. So we have to figure out what they're saying. Even though their whole viewpoint is based on erroneous assumption. Yes, Prabhu.
So
but Nityananda, he was waiting his turn. Why don't we let him first?
Okay.
And now I tried to put all the arguments according to that pratigya, hetu, and then udaharana.
Yeah, you want to present that?
And it's maybe I don't want to hold more to that. Maybe devotees can later.
No. Why don't you give it to us and we can think about it? Why don't you tell us?
Oh, okay. So I just shortly summarized all the things. So the pratigya or the hypothesis is that the only authoritative statements of the Vedas are those which pertain to duties. Now the hetu for that is because every single word to mean something needs the connection to something that has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now the udaharana they give that child thing, then the refutation is of this Prabhakara, of a less radical followers of Prabhakara, is aimed at countering the hetu, which was that every single word to mean something needs the connection to something that has to be done.
Yes.
That they're countering with their two propositions which they knock subsequently there. And basically, they kick out the hetu and then... and that's it. And then the example is no more relevant. And
okay, except that I don't think the Prabhakaras or any other Mimamsakas are trying to prove their basic assumption. Basic assumption is just from on the authority of Jaimini, Sutra 1.1.5 in the Mimamsa Sutras, that only the injunctions are significant. Everything else is anitya, has no eternal purpose. They're not going to try to prove that. They don't have to. It's their guru told them that, and they accept it. It's an axiom, a dogma of faith. I think what they're trying to prove is something else. Okay, so I don't think you correctly identified their thesis, because they're not going to try to give a logical argument for their basic assumption. I don't see you find them doing that. Is that what they're trying to prove here? They're trying to prove, well, the thesis here, it's stated that words refer to something that needs to be done, not to... Yeah, what they're doing is they're making it more general. They're talking about all words, not just the Vedas. No, I'm sorry. Vedas prapramanam, you're right. Their thesis is that the Vedas are authoritative only when they refer to something that needs to be done.
And that's what Jiva Goswami
said. Yeah.
Because he wants to show that the other statements of fact, which are mostly relationship just the truth, are as valid, if not more.
Yes.
And then finally, by understanding the connection of words and their relation to what their meanings,
yeah,
he will show that Vedas can describe the absolute truth.
Yes. Or like their claim, and they're really actually trying to prove it. Their claim that words are significant, or Vedas are authoritative only when they refer to something that has to be done. They're giving a proof of that. That proof is problematic, or that theory is not proven. There's problems with the proof. And we discover it not by attacking them directly. They're attacking each other. They're fighting among themselves, and they discover the inconsistencies. And then we're free to say, anyway, you can argue, keep on arguing forever. Anyway, what you want to prove isn't true anyway. That children do learn just by being shown this is a something and this is something else. We sort of let them go on arguing, and we come and say, well, they can't come to a conclusion, but anyway, what they're trying to prove isn't true anyway. Yes. And, okay, Vishnukanta was waiting. No, go ahead.
But then one may ask, well, what's the further argument to sustain their point?
What is it?
What's the... Because if amongst themselves they say, okay, that's what we believe. We believe in this, like in an axiomatic way, we believe the statement by Jaimini.
Right, they all believe that.
Yeah,
but the more radicals say, even more than that, all words only have meaning in reference to a statement of fact. They don't, see, the less radicals say, you can have statements of fact, they mean something, they have a meaning, but they're not important. They're not authoritative.
In this less radical says, well, you're trying to prove this point, but your argument is not good.
Who's saying?
The less radical ones.
Yeah.
But they...
Well, they're saying that the less radical ones are saying, you're too radical. Okay. You're going too far. And then showing why. Going too far by saying that...
So can we look at their argument?
Yeah, but we'll do that tomorrow.
Okay.
Tomorrow we'll start again on the paragraph at hand. But we had to do this. We had to sort things out. What are we arguing about in the first place? Yes. Now we'll look at the response tomorrow. You want to start off by giving your analysis of it tomorrow morning?
Okay.
It fits in. It's the right place to do it. But we'll do it tomorrow morning.
Thank you. Then I hope maybe tomorrow we'll settle this and we'll finish up this paragraph. Well, at least we'll do the best we can and give up on it. Okay. Okay, I'm going to take a look at it tonight and see if I can get any more ideas. Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Shri Bhagavat Tattva Sandarbha Ki Jai.